Welcome to the Finclusive Podcast, where we believe investing in diversity is not just good for society, but a competitive advantage that impact and return are not mutually exclusive. We talk with underestimated founders and funders on how they're creating new markets around the world. Stella,
Hi Kelly.
Excited to be doing this first podcast with you. The first time doing podcasts together.
Yes, me too.
People that haven't heard about Stella, she's actually our content manager in the space, and she's gonna be helping us a lot with writing our blog posts and also doing this content here, interviewing founders. And she's also going to be joining us more in the due diligence side in Finclusive as well. But today we're going to be talking with Plantina, Earl and Kevin. Maybe I'll introduce Earl a bit because he's actually a friend of mine since like when I was 21. So that's how I actually got to know Earl. And he's such a rock star. Met him in Raytheon, and he worked in went to GSV after in Stanford, and then after that he went to Cisco and then Bridgewater, and worked in the Philippines and started an accelerator. This is his first time as a founder, and he also met his co-founder Kevin at Stanford.
Yeah, and so Kevin is the co-founder at Plantina, and he was formerly a graduate student fellow at NASA. And he worked at Google for 5 years as a machine learning software engineer.
So what do you want to learn from them?
I would love to hear more about their background and how they got together to start Plantina, you know, and it seems like they've all started other incubators and other side projects before. So I'm curious to see, you know, what really drove them to collaborate on this together. Yeah, and the fact that they're both in the Philippines and working in the emerging market space, I think that obviously fits into Finclusive's thesis. So really excited to speak with them.
Yeah, I'm interested in learning like how they are the ones who kind of started accelerator and like innovative labs type work, and like why is it that they still went ahead and joined accelerators? Because it seems like they already know what they're doing, right? So I want to ask them about that too.
Yeah, cool. Yay,
let's get started. Welcome to join us here, Plantina, Erin, Kevin. I want to actually, because we invested in you, even though not a huge amount, but I'm so excited that you guys closed a huge, pretty huge seed round, and I was following you guys since before Techstar. I remember wanting to put in an angel check, and Earl was like, we're not ready yet. Like, I don't want to risk your money. And then I thought it was, you must be doing well when you let me invest in your company. So I actually know that you guys are both coming from the corporate world before. So you guys are first-time founders in a way. Even though you guys did a lot of innovative stuff. So just want to maybe hear from you why you're doing Plantina to get started.
Well, thanks so much for having us, and excited to be here. Yeah, it's been a long journey for, you know, Earl and I to decide to start Plantina, and we each have our own, you know, stories leading up to it. But I come from electrical engineering background. My parents had immigrated from the Philippines. I was born in Los Angeles, but I am proud to be able to serve the Filipino community through this work, as well as more emerging markets. But yeah, Earl and I met about 14 years ago when we were both graduate students at Stanford. So I was working on a machine learning PhD. Earl was working on his business school. And we met because we got all the Filipino graduate students together for regular dinners. And there was just 5 of us at Stanford back then. But we challenged each other, how can we serve the Philippines? And it's something that we still do today. And I'd been a computer vision researcher at NASA Ames, left Stanford to lead data science for Bump Technologies. Bump was that app where you bump the phones together to exchange contact information. And it was super cool, 150 million downloads. Everyone was bumping photos primarily. So we pivoted into photos, and then Google acquired us so that they could build out Google Photos. And my patents come from some from Bump Technologies, some from Google Photo Sharing, and then Android Activity Recognition. I'd always been passionate about driving better outcomes in emerging markets. I founded a team at Google focused on emerging market credit. This is under Area 120, which is Google's internal incubator. Since our Stanford days, Earl's become a bit of a rock star of the Philippine startup ecosystem. So, very happy to reconnect with Earl on some of these problems that we've always been dreaming about solving together.
Yeah, and then Kevin and I were friends for a while, right? And that's the good thing about being founders and having that foundation of having kind of mission and vision. We have alignment even during those dinners in Stanford. Because at least for me, I grew up in Manila most of my life, and it's kind of third year college when I moved back to the U.S. to take up electrical, then aerospace engineering, where I met Kelly, right? In our aerospace engineering days. It was funny because Raytheon wasn't this mega company. It was kind of a big company, but it wasn't, now it's the largest aerospace company, right? Which is pretty wild. And yeah, and I think, it was even in Stanford. I think Kelly, you went to our, Stanford graduation, right? So it's just funny how everything seems to kind of all connect. I had this interesting experience that 2 or 3 years after Stanford, I ended up coming back to the Philippines for 4 years and built out kind of the first accelerator and micro fund of the Philippines, the government program with the country. And kind of I realized there, and actually Kevin and I were collaborating also during the time on, how to unlock really kind of the potential of, both innovators and generally like Filipinos there. And, I think we just had, similar vision together of, maybe with data and strategic partnerships, both our strengths, right? We can unlock kind of, financial services for broader emerging markets, but starting out with the Philippines. So years in the making is what we say, right? But I'm glad that we all kind of found ourselves in San Francisco in 2019 to really think about this and build it up together. So
yeah, that's so great to hear. I'm curious, Kevin, can you tell us a little bit more about the Area 120 incubator at Google and how that influenced your formation of Plantina?
Right. So, I guess before I, went from data scientist to software engineer to project founder at Google to the startup, then I think the progression here is that it felt like I was living two lives, my professional life and my volunteer life, that didn't have very much to do with each other, where I knew that data science, that machine learning had this great power to do amazing things in this world. And then there's the impact that I was trying to drive in emerging markets, where at the time, Earl and I had collaborated on a number of projects. There was, one of these was this webinar series that was trying to deliver technology education from Silicon Valley to emerging markets, like this, university town, a couple hours outside of Manila at the time. And, it was going well. Earl is one of our speakers then too, and he's a great speaker, by the way, but it just wasn't hitting the impact that I wanted to hit at scale. But it was, it was a great look into, how we can, work with emerging markets in order to drive great outcomes. And so, I went to the Philippines a few times in order to just research how can I use machine learning and data science to serve people in emerging markets. So just walking the streets of Metro Manila and in Binondo and Taguig, and just talking to people about their financial situation, on the street. I look pretty young, so people think that I'm just some university student just doing some college paper or something. I'm like, oh yeah, let me tell you all about.
Yeah, what kind of questions did you ask them?
Yeah, like, You know, they some of these would be like, you know, merchants on the street or so, and it'd be, you know, clear what the profession was, but I just, you know, asked them about you know, their work, their financial obligations, what their goals are, right? I think, you know, a question that we like to ask is, you know, in your wildest dreams in 5 years, what would you love to be doing? And so, you know, that kind of reveals, like, you know, what they aspire to do, and like, you know, what are the challenges that they're facing in order to be able to accomplish those things. And so, you know, some people, like, I meet people that the dream of, like, owning a department store in Singapore someday, but, you know, they're selling soda on the street median today with their, you know, newborn in hand. And it's going to be terribly challenging to attain that if you're paying crushing interest rates from, you know, predatory 5-6 lenders in the Philippines that, you know, take the savings away.
I know that there are something that is like yours in the Philippines already when I was doing due diligence on your company. And like, how are you guys different from your competitors? And maybe to also give our audience a little bit of background, like what you guys do as well.
So this general kind of area, which is, I guess it's called buy now, pay later in the world, right? But then there's also kind of, you know, what does it mean for emerging markets, right? And I think that there's two big pain points of this buy now, pay later to work in emerging markets. Like, one is basically access to data, right? And basically, to be honest, it's credit assessment data, right? And the other one is really, how do we get merchants to align with you strategically? Right. And I think those are the two big ones, and especially for merchants that might not have very mature technology teams, right, which are most retailers probably in the rest of emerging markets. Right. So I think those are the two ones that we identified. So it's like a chicken and the egg. Right. So think about it, maybe 20 or 30 years ago in the United States and other developed countries where credit card penetration is also probably the same as today, right, in emerging markets. So just to give context, credit card penetration in most of Southeast Asia minus Singapore is below 10%. So how do you then get credit, high velocity credit purchase data at scale without credit cards, which is the most probably high signal velocity in places like the US, right? And for us, it's really how do we then work with large merchants to already have a little bit of this data, right? So for us, we partner with a number of large merchants already in our pilot market, which is the Philippines, and build basically a de facto credit scoring system at scale at day one, even at a startup, right? So I think that's one. So we have our own proprietary kind of credit assessment system, which
you guys do that because of 7-Eleven. And tell us about, like, what's special about 7-Eleven in the Philippines.
Right. So yeah, you know, proud to have this initial partnership with 7-Eleven Philippines. We're solving that problem of access to data, of CAC as well, because, you know, initially we were trying to serve a market that didn't have access to, you know, easy access to technology, not a lot of signal to underwrite these people, but with merchant partnerships, then we can leverage things like loyalty programs so that we can be able to underwrite more people, and also potentially leverage you know, free co-marketing from merchants that want to sell more stuff. So with this partnership, 7-Eleven Philippines, then you know, under their instruction, then we can help them generate a credit score for their customer base so that they can be able to market credit to their customers, and they get to sell more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I know the difference is that, like, in 7, like, people, most of the people, like, pay their bills or something. And
yep, yeah, so that's something too.
In Philippines to pay their financial stuff and, like,
yeah, that's correct, right? So unlike 7-Eleven, probably in the United States, where you get a hot dog and a Slurpee, right? And that's probably it. But in most of Asia, actually, not just the Philippines, it's actually quite the multidimensional store. It's literally a convenience store where you can pay your bills, top up your mobile wallet, right? You can go there to, I mean, anything related to financial services, you know, load up your prepaid, mobile, mobile phone. So literally you have not just the retail data, but also some financial data, which kind of mimics probably what you can have in, you know, a Plaid in the US or whatnot. So, we're pretty lucky that we have that strategic partnership with not just a large retailer, but also a large financial service provider in the market, especially an offline, cash-in leader in a place like the Philippines. So, I think that's at least our approach. And we're pretty lucky to have a very good start to kind of achieve our vision.
To follow up with the earlier question, so then how are they, is your competitor not doing that? How are you solving this problem that's like different from what they're doing? Like, why don't they talk to 7-Eleven?
Yeah, Kevin, you can go ahead and give your perspective, right? And I have my own, because it's a bit nuanced, right? But I love this question, by the way.
Right. So there are a number of players in the pay later space that have been typically focused on the e-commerce space and high ticket item space. So this is a space that you'd require the merchant to have a tech team in order to integrate an API so that you can enable that e-commerce checkout. The challenge in emerging markets is that it's not so simple as just grafting an Affirm or a Klarna into an emerging market, because most of the merchants don't have tech teams in order to integrate that API. Let alone in most cases an e-commerce site to do so. We're serving the over 90% of the the Philippines GDP that would self-identify as offline offline commerce. So that we can work with their legacy systems and they can still be able to sell on credit to the over 90% of customers that don't have a credit card. And we just make it work with their legacy systems in order to do so. So we're excited to be selling with a variety of merchants in different verticals.
Yeah, and it's why, because we have the data advantage then for the consumer side, because we're a B2B2C, right? So that's the B2B side. The B2C side is that there's no paperwork involved, and a lot of our quote unquote competitors still has some paper, some verification, some manual thing that happens, or a cash in the loop, right? And then for us, because we have the data advantage, we can probably, from download, at least our average, from download to getting a loan is probably less than 10 minutes, right? Imagine that you're literally heading toward the 7-Eleven, right? And you're like, oh, I think I need the, I don't have cash now. Or you're literally at the 7-Eleven, right? And you're like, oh man, like, what will I do? You can probably get, and if you're approved or verified, right, then you can probably get a 7-Eleven kind of buy now pay later loan, like in the time that you're in the store, right? So I think that's something that we're pretty proud of. In fact, that's a lot of our reviews in the app store, right? It's like, it's fast, it's convenient, it's easy, it's, it's simple, right? So it's kind of interesting. The CX, right, that we are trying to study, that, we thought that our competitors, and there's a lot of people are doing this already with the same type of advantage, and apparently very few are.
Well, I'm curious, so then what has the reviews from the merchants' perspectives been like?
Yeah, I think they're excited, right? In fact, the CEO of 7-Eleven, he's been into a number of press releases that they, he mentioned us as one of their strategic partners, right? And then also we have this kind of campaign with Smart, which is a large telco ongoing right now, that they're actually pushing us to their base, right? So it's a whole alignment, right? I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of them, they want to kind of not sell more, but to give this type of service to their consumers. And they've been wanting something like this for a while that actually aligns with them, right? Because a lot of times we as tech companies, we think that our platform is this and this is our standard. But then in emerging markets, right, like there's always nuances in each type of merchant. So they really like that we have a very B2B approach, right? Not just like a platform approach. So we have like a large, like high touch enterprise team, right? That we actually try to make sure that, how do we actually have the right type of partnership for you? So if you can't, let's say, do SMS campaigns, how do we think about a PR campaign for co-marketing, right? Let's say if you don't have data sets, right? Like how can we kind of mimic your data and work with your own restrictions, let's say from data privacy? So I think that's really something that they really appreciate, especially now. And we're not targeting small companies, right? We're not targeting SMEs. We're targeting people, you know, kind of the equivalent of the Fortune 100 or Fortune 50 of the Philippines, right? $1 billion companies from a revenue side. And, you know, I think they're just used to this. And how do we then have that approach of really good strategic partnership motion, a really good data analytics, and obviously a very good consumer experience kind of all rolled into one.
To add to that, and you know, what I think if I were a merchant, then I would think about the default rate. And that's actually when I was trying to pitch you to a lot of investors, they are most worried about that. Like, you know, are you guys, is your analytic and data good enough so that people are actually making a profit out of this? Like, you're not gonna, like, what's the default rate for all the loans that you like? Like, supposedly, when you lend small loan, then that's okay. But as you start to increase the amount, then the default rate could get high. How do you guys plan to attack this?
Imagine that our system, right, is like a, what you call a ladder, right? So our customers get an initial $2 loan, right? And as they repay, they increase their credit, quote unquote, limit, right? So for us, you know, the initial loan is probably related to cost of acquisition, but at the same time, it's also a way for them and us, right, our customers and us, to build basically trust, right, in a place where there's very little trust, right? So that's one side. And it's still quite early days to kind of think about default rates. I think for us, it's like, how do we actually grow our base in order for us to then do more and more experiments? And we also take the risk of the loan, right? So it's not like the merchants are like, oh, by the way, this is like my balance sheet, right? Like, no. So Plantina goes there and say, hey, by the way, we are there for you, right? Like, we even put our money where our mouth is. And what's the risk to you? The risk to you is to promote us to your customer base. And they're like, oh, okay, that's a cool discussion, right? So I think that's really where we are and why, right? Our long-term goal is to align ourselves with the merchant, but also then how do we actually create, you know, really long-term value for the consumer, right? You know, starting with this micro buy now, pay later product. So I think that's probably more to come in the next, you know, couple of months, years, right, for us. But at least our approach is how do we become most relevant to our consumer base and most relevant to the merchant base. And I think, you know, we'll then always continue to obviously improve on our metrics, including the default rate.
When you're asking the merchants on the street, like, you know, where they see themselves in 5 years, where do you guys see yourself in 5 years? Where would you like to be?
Yeah, we see that, you know, pay later services and lending are a bit of our foot in the door to offering more financial services in the future. So, you know, in the future, we'd love to be able to do things like store value for customers and to be able to offer them you know, things like savings, like investments in the future, and be able to expand into more markets beyond the Philippines as well. When the time is right, that we'd be able to leverage you know, similarities between one, the Philippines market and other markets that might share some characteristics in financial inclusion, access to technology, financial education, but also be able to leverage some of the multinational corporation partnerships that we've already struck so that you know, expansion could be as simple as you know, working in a new country, but with the same model, with the same merchant partner.
Yeah. So our hashtag is unlock your potential, right? So, and you know that's why I kind of, I think, mentioned it in the beginning. But you know, with all these, hopefully more products, more financial services, really can make a dent in these emerging markets that we enter, especially with the demographics that we see, right? Like, for example, the Philippines, the median age is about 24, 25 years old. I think the rest of Southeast Asia is sub 30 years old, right? So imagine that there's going to be cohorts of people that were excluded from financial services by design from the formal financial sector for the past forever. And, you know, if we can make a dent and we can actually include what we enjoy here in the US and the Western world of, you know, access to credit, access to investments, access to savings in a very unique and digital way, we can then unlock literally potential of hundreds of millions of people, right? So that's really, the, I think, the big thought process here. And how we do it is through, obviously, our fintech, right? So, yeah, so that's why the Philippines is a start. Buy now, pay later is a start. But, you know, who knows 5 years from now, right? I think our peg is that even Grab, you know, Grab was a transport company, right? And they're now in only a few countries, probably like 5 countries or less in Southeast Asia. But what they're valued now at 20, 30 billion is listed in the stock exchange, right? So
great. Thank you. I guess pivoting a little bit, can you tell us when you guys joined the Techstars Western Union Accelerator Program, like how established your product was and how the program has helped you, both in terms of growing your team and making connections in the fintech space in general?
So at that time, then the Techstars program, when we applied, then we had a prototype app pre-launch. We had started talking to our initial partner at the time, but it was quite early. I think at the time, then we had just a tiny amount of angel investment. But I think that we were thrilled that, you know, Techstars was going to take a chance on us and be able to, you know, see the potential of what it is that we wanted to build in emerging markets. And so, you know, we were thrilled to be accepted into their Techstars Western Union Accelerator, which is based out of Colorado, but unfortunately due to the pandemic, then, you know, it was a remote program. And we were really happy to be connected to a set of peer startups that that were going through the same kind of challenges we were at the time. And so we were able to put our heads together, be able to solve some of these common problems, get advice from people that have been there before, as well as you know, have the support of a large you know, giant in the space like Western Union. So that we can learn from, you know, the resources of their staff and lessons learned there as well. And so we received a lot of support, you know, formulating, you know, refining our early pitch then and getting us ready for growing our partnerships at that early as well. So we're you know, thrilled to launch the program, launch the product finally in October, which is just at the very end. I think at the demo day, we announced that we're going to be launching the product like, you know, a week later or so. So that was pretty cool.
That's great. Thank you, Earl. I was looking on your website and I read about the interns that you've had recently, and I'm really happy to see that you're kind of empowering the next generation of students, both in terms of educating them on financial literacy and also giving them the experience of working at a startup. I'd love to just hear more about the students that you've been working with and what kind of work they're helping you do, and how are you, I mean, I'm sure you're swamped with so much work. How are you managing mentorship in addition of running and company and fundraising?
Yeah, so without the interns, Plantina would not be possible, right? So that's the thing. So as I mentioned during Techstars, we were literally had a cohort of, I think, 4 to 5 interns at a time. And, you know, some interns focused on building our logos. Some people, interns, like, helped us build our website. Some people helped us write some of these articles that came out in the press release, right? So for us, we see interns not necessarily as, you know, part-time employees, right? Or even interns, they're actually a critical part of our own infrastructure, right? And I think the biggest lesson that we learned is, their biggest, we asked them afterwards, like, what was the biggest lesson or benefit of working in a startup, particularly in Plantina? And they said it's a way for them to discover what they really want in life, right? And we help them do it. So for us, similar to also a lot of our employees, right, both junior and senior employees, right, we always ask the same question that Kevin asked, right, which is, you know, in your wildest dreams, what do you want to do in 5 years? And, you know, some of them say, interns in particular, like, oh, I want to work in a consulting company, like McKinsey. Obviously, I asked, like, oh, why do you want a consulting company, right? But then we give them an experience related to, let's say, strategy or product marketing, right? Which then they leverage to interview with consulting, right? You know, some people, like, for example, now our HR associate was an intern last summer, right? And she runs our recruiting process now. But I remember our first conversations, like, what do you want to do in 5 years? Like, oh, I really want to be like a head of HR of a company. And literally in 6 months' time, she runs a recruiting for us. Obviously, now we're just like 6 to 8 people. But imagine that her story 1 year from now is she built and helped build a company that's like 30 people from scratch, right? So for us, that's, I think, the type of growth. So Kevin's very good in saying, you know, what is the main values for the company? And one of the core values is growth. Growth for our employees, growth for our customers. But for the growth of our employees, you know, we always tell them, how can we help you achieve your wildest 5-year dream? And how can Plantina just be part of that, right? Not necessarily to say you got to do what Plantina tells you to do, but we just try to align where they should go. So yeah, that's our internship program. And we're continuing to get a number of interns from all over the world, right? Like we even have an intern that's, you know, virtually interning from Japan. We had a team of not interns, but, you know, strategic consulting kind of project teams from UC Berkeley the last month. A couple of people helping us from different parts of the world. So we're very lucky that we have that and, you know, having that in our back pocket is always nice, right? Because we don't treat our interns any different than, you know, kind of our employees, right? So
that's awesome. Sounds like culture, values and culture are really important to Plantina, and it's sort of the way that you guys are leading and building your company. And I mean, I definitely see that's your strategic advantage as well, and how you differentiate yourself from your competitors. So thank you so much for joining us today, Kevin and Earl. Like, if there's any like last word that you want to say or anything that people can help you with, where can people find you?
Yeah, well, thanks again for having us. And there's just so much meaningful work to be done in financial inclusion in emerging markets. And we're proud to be taking part in this. And if you are inspired by the potential of unlocking the potential of billions in emerging markets, then please check us out at plantina.com. And you can also check us out at plantina.com/careers as well. And we would love to be able to meet people that are passionate about being able to use their skill sets to unlock the potential of emerging markets.
Yep, well said, Kevin. I think just to add here is that, you know, if you're always thinking about, you know, the journey of starting a company, I think, you know, you have to look deep inside of why you want to do it. And we're lucky, Kevin and I, of, you know, trying to do something that was there as a spark since the beginning. So hopefully that and also finding the right types of investors, like, you know, Finclusive, right, and others, right, I think it's also very valuable to be part of your journey. So again, thank you, Kelly, for taking a chance on us and being part of our journey, but also, you know, I think our other investors, we want to thank them, and more to come, right? There's a lot that we have to do, and, you know, would love, you know, investors, partners, you know, employees, but also obviously we owe it to our market and our customers to be successful, right? So, but yeah, lucky to have this chance. So yeah, I mean, check us out, plentina.com and plentina.com/careers, and get to hang out with me and Kevin, right? So.